Chapter 16. Character in Performance. What do audiences and readers want from a cast of characters? Discovery and recognition. Discovery. Audiences and readers want to venture into a story the way explorers push into a wilderness. They seek the anthropological excitement of discovering a tribe they've never seen before. For no matter how exotic or familiar the setting, its inhabitants are always strangers. Eccentric traits and intriguing behaviors mark these roles, and so the reader audience wants to know them and understand them. As Aristotle said, the greatest of all pleasures is the pleasure of learning without being taught. Through stories and their characters, the reader audience gains effortless insight into human nature and the real-life consequences of its desires and actions. Recognition. Once in the setting, the reader audience wants to discover himself. At the heart of the story's protagonist, and perhaps other characters as well, he recognizes a humanity that reflects his own. Not in every way, obviously, but in some essential quality. In other words, empathy with a complex character is like looking into a mirror. An empathetic character opens an emotional door to an intimate, even primal, deeply felt, yet fascinating identification. Without empathy, the reader audience sits outside looking in, feeling little, learning less. Discovery and recognition allows readers and audiences to travel through thousands of fictional realities, to live lives they could never live, in worlds they could never know, to experience feelings light years beyond their daily existence. To explore how character performance achieves this for readers and audiences, let's start with 7 common character functions. 7 functions of character in performance. 1. To expand the reader's audience's intellectual pleasure. The violation of expectation sparks insight, but it's a character's unique traits and surprising yet believable behavior that adds fascination to the society and setting that surrounds him. 2. To develop empathy in the reader audience. Empathy is key. Without an emotion-deepening sense of shared humanity, readers and audiences become indifferent and disinterested. 3. To drive suspense. Suspense is emotional curiosity, the merger of the reader audience's interest in the character's nature with their concern for his well-being. Pure curiosity without concern turns a character into an intellectual case study. Pure concern, devoid of curiosity, becomes mindless longing. To sustain plot-long suspense, a character's actions must be various, but within limits. If he can do only one thing, he generates no suspense. If he can do anything, even the impossible, once again, no suspense. 4. To create a puzzle within a puzzle. A story is a mass of questions. What is happening now? What will happen next? How will this turn out? A complex character offers readers and audiences yet another set of questions, taking them into psychological depths. Who is he? What does he think he wants? What does he really want? Why does he want these things? How do his desires contradict each other? Who will he become? By adding puzzle piece after puzzle piece, a character creates a second line of psychological suspense that runs parallel to the story's overall plot-driven suspense. 5. To surprise. Not only do unexpected counteractions from a character's world startle the reader audience, but so do the character's reactions to them. The surprising way he copes with change gives readers and audiences insight into his nature. Ideally, therefore, with every turning point, a character's reaction to the unexpected, followed by his choice of action, no matter how big or small, should seem unpredictable and yet in character, making surprising yet retrospective sense. 6. To bring out dimensions in other characters. As we'll learn in the next chapter, in a well-designed cast, characters illuminate and develop one another. 7. To inspire insight into human nature. Characters, no matter how realistic or fantasied, induce inner visions in readers and audiences. Searching through the natures of characters encourages them to explore not only themselves, but the innerness of the people around them. The reader-audience-character connection. Feelings of fear, rage, love, hate, suspicion, defiance, and submission have evolved to cope with life's deadliest threat, other people. That's a sensible adaptation. What isn't logical is the way we disconnect these energies from reality and aim them at people who do not exist. Emotion helps us to survive in reality, but what's the point of making ourselves vulnerable in a fiction? As noted, characters serve an educational purpose. People, both real and imagined, are puzzles to be solved. Characters arouse our curiosity and then satisfy it as we perceive what's in their minds, giving us valuable insights into ourselves and others. That makes sense. It's our emotional connection that seems strange. Crying over the charred victims of a forest fire is a logical reaction in real life. But why do we shed tears for characters who perished in the towering inferno? How do imagined beings in imagined worlds cross the line from fantasy to actuality and break the hearts of audiences and readers? How do unreal beings spur real, even painful, emotions? The power of as if. Between our two inner domains of rational thought and instinctive emotion sits a third realm. When it wishes, the mind can leave reality behind and relax into the imaginary landscape of as if. The power to pretend, to think in an as-if mode, is an evolutionary adaptation that has enhanced survival. The shift to a hypothetical gear gives the self a chance to rehearse reality before it happens, as a means to survive when it does happen. The first art, for example, far older than cave painting or figurative carving, was dance, an ancient as-if ceremony that mimicked hunting and killing as preparation for real life-and-death violence. The same is true of stories and their characters. When we connect to people who do not exist, we experience trial emotions, love prior to actual romance, fear prior to actual threats, grief prior to actual loss. Emotional immersions in the as-if of fiction prepare the mind for the real thing. They rehearse survival and equip us for life. Reader Audience POV. From an audience's or a reader's point of view, the emotions they feel for characters seem simple and natural. But for the writer, creating and shaping these experiences calls for a skillful balancing of one aspect with another. First of all, life contains just two basic emotional experiences, the pleasureful and the painful. Each of these, however, comes in infinite shades and strains. The pleasureful, such as joy, love, beauty, and sensuality, versus the painful, such as grief, rage, terror, and sadness. Varying qualities of emotion depend on two different reader-audience reactions to character: sympathy and empathy. Sympathy, aka likability. When the reader audience feels that a character is likable, sympathetic feelings flow. A pleasant and agreeable character becomes someone they would like as a neighbor, a coworker, or an acquaintance, someone worth a chat now and then. And of course, the reverse is also true. If a reader audience dislikes a character, then their feelings turn toward irritation, even contempt, which may be exactly what the writer wants. Empathy, aka identification. The moment a reader opens a book or a storygoer takes a seat, he begins searching the story's world for the best place to put his emotional interest. As setting and cast appear, he quickly sorts positives from negatives, worthy from worthless, boring from interesting, right from wrong, good from evil, seeking the center of good. He seeks the good because, like all human beings, he's aware of his flaws and weaknesses, but, on balance, he's convinced that he's more true than false, more just than unjust, more fair than unfair, his intentions sincere. Because he considers himself essentially positive, he naturally seeks the story's center of good as a mirror of himself. When he senses a link between a quality within himself and the same quality living inside a cast member, he identifies with that character. Empathy, his sense of someone like me, turns this character into a person he might want to have as family, friend, or lover, or even become himself. Empathy is instinctive. It happens spontaneously and subconsciously. Antipathy needs a conscious choice. When the mind spots moral or aesthetic repulsiveness in a role's inner nature, it refuses to identify, and any chance for empathy withers into an aversion or no feeling at all. Once a reader or audience goer senses a kindred spirit, he instinctively roots for that character's success. He experiences the telling, to some degree, as if it were happening to him. He lives in parallel to the character as he vicariously performs the character's actions and experiences the character's emotions. The primacy of empathy. When facing a work of story art, people become moral philosophers. They measure the behavior of characters against ethical standards higher than the ones they enforce in themselves. In the struggle between what a person should do versus must do, audiences lean toward the should as they seek the center of good. This is why, when two intelligent, sensitive people experience the same story and yet come away with opposite reactions, it has little to do with the telling and everything to do with empathy. One empathized with the protagonist and so loved the story, subconsciously sweeping away all flaws so as not to spoil his pleasure. The other felt antipathy toward the protagonist and so hates the story and finds its flaws painful. In other words, one identified with the center of good, the other couldn't find it, or if he did, was repelled by it. The center of good doesn't name a glow of kindness or sweetness. Empathetic characters often wage private wars between moral and immoral impulses. Rather, the phrase refers to the positive light at the heart of a character that shines in contrast to the negative shades surrounding it. To make certain that empathy flows where it's needed most, the storyteller anchors this positive charge in the central plot's protagonist. Placement of the center of good within a character is just one of many delicate graces an author must manage while shaping the reader audience's emotions. Here's a short list of five such balancing acts. A balance of good. Consider Mario Puzo's Godfather trilogy. It maps out a criminal universe of gangsters, crooked cops, and corrupt politicians. The Corleone family, however, has one positive quality: loyalty. They stick together and defend each other. Other mafia families backstab in constant cycles of betrayal. That makes them the bad guys, while the Godfather's family's loyalty makes them the good bad guys. When the audience senses that positive charge, empathy flows, and they find themselves identifying with mobsters. To take the center of good a step deeper, look at the cast design of Thomas Harris's novel, The Silence of the Lambs. The reader finds an empathetic center in Clarice Starling, the protagonist, but they also find one in a first circle role, Hannibal Lecter. To begin, the author surrounds Lecter with a darker world. The FBI manipulates Clarice while it lies to Lecter. Lecter's psychiatrist and jailer is a sadist and publicity hound. The cops Lecter kills are fools. Then Harris radiates powerful lights from within the character. Lecter is massively intelligent. He feels compassion for Clarice. His dry wit is a delight. His schemes are brilliant and pulled off with cool courage. He lives in a hellish asylum, yet stays amazingly calm and gentlemanly. As a center of good forms within Lecter, the reader identifies with him, thinking and shrugging. So he eats people. There are worse things. Offhand, I can't think what, but there must be. Because if I were a psychopathic, cannibalistic serial killer, I'd want to be just like Lecter. He's amazing. A balance of power. At an early point in your story's development, do this. Put your protagonist in one hand, so to speak, and weigh his capacities for action, intelligence, imagination, will, maturity, and other such strengths. Then, in your other hand, weigh the sum total of power in all the sources of antagonism he will have to confront through the telling. Start with impulses and contradictory desires at war within him. He may well be his own worst enemy. On top of his inner conflicts, stack the problems he'll confront in his personal relationships. Next, add antagonisms from the institutions that surround him: employment, government, church, and the like. Lastly, top it off with forces in the physical world: the chaos of traffic, extreme weather, lethal diseases, not enough time to get things done, too far to go to get what he needs, the brevity of life itself. When you weigh your protagonist's individual capacities against the sum total of antagonistic forces he will face from all levels of his life, you should see that the odds against achieving his object of desire are enormous. He is an underdog. At heart, everyone on this planet thinks of himself as an underdog. The poor and the weak obviously are, but even rich, powerful top dogs whine and wallow in self-pity over government regulations and taxes. Virtually everyone feels that life is an uphill battle against persistently negative forces, starting with the fact that sooner or later, your time will be up. For that reason, readers and audiences will not empathize with an overdog such as Mark Zuckerberg, Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network. To draw empathy to the heart of your story, therefore, place your protagonist at the center of good, array very powerful forces against him, and cast him as an underdog. A balance of intensity. Some characters we love for a lifetime, others we dismiss. The vividness of a character in the reader audience's imagination, along with the intensity of their caring, depends on the strength of identification. To feel an intense link, they imagine what it would be like to be the character and sense his thoughts and feelings. This, of course, depends on a willingness to empathize. Some characters we swallow whole, others we only taste and judge. An author must create a role both complex enough to hold the reader audience's conscious interest and human enough to capture their subconscious empathy. A balance of focus. Drawing empathy away from the telling central character to a supporting role instead risks defocusing the reader audience. On the other hand, each subplot has a subcenter of good in its protagonist. These additional storylines often magnify overall involvement. Readers and audiences can identify with a great variety of roles. When a cast draws its storygoers into multiple lines of empathy, they focus on several at once or alternate between them. A diverse cast gives them the chance to visit different mental landscapes and to empathize with or be repelled by what they discover inside. Game of Thrones, for example, follows three major story arcs. The first takes Cersei Lannister as protagonist against the royal families who fight to usurp her or win independence from her rule. The second arc takes Daenerys Targaryen as its protagonist and follows her quest to reclaim the Iron Throne. The third arc takes Jon Snow as the protagonist, leading the Night Watch into battle against the Night King and his White Walkers. These three cross-cutting central plots spawned numerous subplots of family conflict, political drama, and love story, along with plots of character redemption, degeneration, evolution, and devolution. Practically every major character had a subplot, and with that, a subcenter of good. A balance of attitudes. When a cast of characters reacts to one of its members, their response radiates social signals such as empathy, antipathy, likability, animosity, or indifference. If the reader audience empathizes with the cast, they're encouraged to feel what the cast feels. If they dislike the cast, that's their cue to feel the opposite of whatever the cast feels. The Bridges of Madison County, for example, uses a scene in a diner to shape the audience's attitude toward adultery. When a well-known adulteress enters the coffee shop, the protagonist, who's contemplating adultery himself, offers her a seat at the lunch counter. As she takes it, the locals whisper and glare at her until, humiliated, she turns and walks out. The two adulterers are attractive, intelligent, and polite. The townies who stare at them are snarly-faced and ignorant, each misshapen in his or her own special way. The audience senses that if they join this adultery-hating crowd, they too might seem repulsive and obnoxious. To escape that, they send their empathy where the writer wants it, to the good-looking sinners. The danger of empathy. Even though human beings are genetically disposed to empathize, their feelings toward characters vary greatly by intensity and depth from story to story, reader to reader, audience to audience. People motivated by self-interest are less sensitive to the inner states of characters. Others with strong empathetic natures are more sensitive. Taken a step too far, the overly empathetic fall prey to the narcissists who exploit them. By making us gravitate toward people like me, empathy also causes prejudice and impairs judgment. It leads us to prefer attractive people to ugly, nepotism to merit, short-term victims of an immediate disaster to long-term victims of disease or starvation. It discourages quiet observation, listening, and judgment. On the other hand, without empathy to deepen involvement, sympathy alone twists into sentimentality. Sentiment versus sentimentality. As noted previously, sentiment is a balanced emotional response in proportion to the events that caused it. Sentimentality is an imbalanced, undermotivated, overexpressed indulgence that's out of proportion to the events that caused it. For example, a brave smile through trembling tears shed over a child's better-than-average report card. In the climax of Game of Thrones, Season 8, Episode 5, The Bells, Jaime Lannister fights his way to the trapped and terrified Cersei. Just as the Red Keep collapses around them, he takes her in his arms and says, "Look at me. Just look at me. Nothing else matters. Only us." He sacrifices his life so that she won't die alone. This act, in proportion to his love, moves an honest sentiment. In Schindler's List, a black-and-white film set during the Holocaust, a little girl wearing a bright red coat walks through the horrific liquidation of Krakow. Later, Oskar Schindler sees the child's dead body wrapped in her red coat, and the sight moves him to change from selfish, callous materialist to noble, self-sacrificing hero. This is wish fulfillment. And as phony as a villain stroking a kitten to show that, evil as he is, he can feel something for a pet. As Carl Jung pointed out, cruelty seduces its victims with the syrup of sentimentality. Reader audience interpretation. A story asks its reader audience to interpret not only the events in front of them, but off-screen, off-stage, or off-page happenings as well. They must add up what has occurred since the previous scene that led to the present, and they must infer the future this present event may bring. Without their ability to interpret, involvement is impossible. The same is true for subtext. To discover the truth of a character's motivations, readers and audiences must look past his words and deeds, his choices and actions, and seek hidden causes and meanings. Interpretation, however, depends on an understanding of desires and values. To react fully and grasp a clear meaning, the reader audience must sense a character's immediate desire in each scene and how these scene-by-scene desires feed into his end goal at climax. To understand what a character wants, however, the reader audience must also understand the values at play in each scene and the core value that drives the story. A misunderstanding of a character's values causes a misunderstanding of character desires, which leads to misinterpretation. If readers or audiences cannot sort out what's at stake in your character's life, what's positive from what's negative, then they may misunderstand what the character wants or why he wants it. Their bewilderment leads to mistaken readings that distort the meaning you want to express. Case study: Heart of Darkness. Set in Africa in the 1890s, Joseph Conrad's novella Heart of Darkness follows riverboat captain Charles Marlowe up the Congo on a mission for a Belgian trading company to bring back a cargo of ivory and the company's agent, Kurtz, who they fear has gone rogue. During the voyage, Marlowe questions people who know Kurtz, and everything he hears seems contradictory. Some fear and mistrust him, hinting at a sinister nature. Others claim he's a civilized, charismatic artist and musician. One thing is certain. Kurtz knows how to inspire the slaughter of elephants and pile up their tusks by the ton. In one possible interpretation, Marlowe is a psychological detective, fascinated by the enigmatic Kurtz. This makes the story's core value insight, ignorance, and the discovery of the real Kurtz, Captain Marlowe's object of desire. In a different reading, Marlowe is a lost soul, adrift in moral confusion. His fellow Europeans think that colonialism brings civilization to the Dark Continent, but Marlowe suspects that this is a convenient self-deception to rationalize their greed. He hopes that Kurtz understands this too, and has rebelled against his employers by choosing the virtues of primitive nobility over perverse civilization. In this case, the story's core value becomes purity, corruption. And Marlowe's object of desire is to prove that human nature, in its primal state, is innately good. When Marlowe reaches Kurtz, however, he discovers that the once civilized gentleman has turned into a vicious tyrant, worshipped like a god by brutalized, terrified tribesmen. Kurtz's embrace of the primitive has not unleashed his nobility, but his barbarity. Different values create different meanings. In the first interpretation, when Marlowe discovers the radically changed Kurtz, he realizes that because the core self evolves, it's impossible to know another person's true identity. In the second interpretation, Marlowe gains a deeper, more universal insight into the savagery of human nature. Key point. Once the reader audience grasps the story's essential subject matter, its core value, that perception grounds their interpretation of character. Reader audience perception. In addition to the emotions they feel and the meanings they interpret, readers and audiences also perceive characters on different levels, text versus subtext, at different points in the chain of events, free will versus fate, from different angles of awareness, mystery versus suspense versus dramatic irony. During the creative process, an author needs to work with his characters from each of these three points of view. Text versus subtext. Feeling empathy is not the same thing as perceiving subtext. Readers and audiences read the minds of characters they hate as well as love. Rather than simply following a story with interest, they become simultaneously aware of what's going on two levels: outward sayings and doings versus inward thinking and feeling, text versus subtext. As Dostoevsky noted, the implied inner life of a complex role is symphonic. When one character tells another what's on his mind, readers and audiences hear just two or three notes, but then perceive an orchestra of thoughts and feelings playing within. The two modes of character performance activate this perception in two very different ways. On page, the creativity of the writer and the imagination of the reader combine to create characters. On stage and on screen, the actor, supported by directors, lighting and set designers, cinematographers, editors, makeup artists, and composers, work in concert to bring the writer's creation to the audience. In terms of characterization, audiences watching the screen or stage see characters from head to foot as they move through their social and physical settings. They absorb an enormous amount of detail, leaving little work for the imagination. The reader, on the other hand, notes details, some concrete, some metaphorical, then adds his own personal experience scattered through a lifetime, and finally pours these ingredients into his imagination, stirring the bits and pieces together to concoct a characterization. In terms of true character, when watching performances on stage or on screen, the imagination peers past the actor's eyes, past words and gestures, past intentions and self-deceptions, searching for the truth rising up from the subconscious. It sees the character form ideas in his conscious mind, but then hold them unspoken beneath the surface of his persona. First-person prose often puts the character's conscious thoughts, although unspoken to other characters, on the page. Now the reader must penetrate the written text to scan the protagonist's subconscious. The inner life of the rest of the cast comes filtered through the narrator's perceptions. How much that warps the true thoughts and desires of these characters alters from author to author. Third-person prose varies perceptions. Some writers show and imply, others tell and explain. Writers who show dramatize surface behaviors and imply a character's inner life. Those who tell portray a character's thoughts and feelings directly on the page. Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea is an example of the first. Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalloway is an example of the second. Today, most third-person prose mixes showing with telling, implying with explaining. Free will versus fate. As noted previously, when we begin a story and look forward to its ending, the protagonist's course to the future seems open to all possibilities. But when the story ends and we look back to the beginning, events seem predetermined. Now that we know him in depth, we feel that his psychology could not let him act any other way than he did. Given the innate powers of the physical and social world that surrounded him, what happened had to happen. He was at the mercy of an invisible but inevitable fate. In storytelling, the perception of determinism versus free will depends on the reader audience's location in time, before, during, or after events. Before things happen, we're ignorant of what lies ahead, so the characters seem free to choose and act. But after things happen, we look back and discover that a multitude of interconnected forces flowed into everything. The outcome now seems destined. The writer, therefore, needs to pace character arcs, scene by scene, sequence by sequence, act by act, so that our curiosity at the beginning is satisfied at the ending by a retrospective insight into their fate. Mystery, suspense, dramatic irony. Characters struggle through invented events in invented worlds, unaware that they live in a fiction. To them, the telling is their life. Readers and audiences, meanwhile, sit outside story time, knowing events before, during, or after the characters experience them. This split in awareness creates three storytelling strategies: mystery, suspense, dramatic irony. Mystery puts characters ahead of the reader or audience. In the classic murder mystery, for example, someone goes to a closet for a shirt, opens the door, and a dead body falls out. This twist puts the victim's killer ahead of the storygoer. The killer knows who did it, but he's not talking. Therefore, the ever-curious reader audience knows less than the characters, runs from behind, looking ahead, following events wherever they lead, trying to find out what the characters already know. Stories ruled by mystery, especially those propelled by master detectives, draw sympathy, but no empathy. Sherlock Holmes is likable, but not like us. We can't identify with him because his brilliance touches perfection. Suspense puts the reader audience in the same moment as the cast. The instant events happen, they impact both characters and storygoers. The reader audience may anticipate certain turning points, and characters may hide certain secrets, but overall, each knows the past, present, while neither knows the future. Thus, the major dramatic question becomes, how will this turn out? 90% of all storytelling implies this strategy. Dramatic irony puts the reader audience ahead of the characters, knowing future events before they happen to the cast. This strategy shifts the major dramatic question from how will this turn out to how and why did these characters do what I already know they did. Two films by Billy Wilder, Double Indemnity and Sunset Boulevard, open with their protagonists riddled with bullets, then flash back to the choices and actions that cost them their lives. Because the filmgoer knows the ending from the very beginning, he watches from a godlike perspective, knowing that the schemes the protagonist thinks will enrich him will ultimately kill him. Stories set during renowned historical events or told about famous people automatically position the reader audience in dramatic irony. But then, to some degree, no matter the telling strategy, the reader audience often knows things characters don't. For example, anything said, done, or planned in any scene that does not contain the protagonist instantly gives us greater knowledge than him because we were there and he wasn't. However, other than biographies and murder mysteries, the exclusive use of either dramatic irony or closed mystery is relatively rare. Instead, most writers merge all three. Suspense shapes their overall strategy, but within its arc, characters that hide secrets know more than the storygoer, while readers and audiences reacting to flashbacks know more than the characters in them. The political and romantic plot lines in Casablanca fill the film with suspense, but within that tension, a flashback to the young lovers meeting in Paris adds a layer of dramatic irony. As the audience watches Rick and Ilse's romance, they know the dark future that awaits the lovers. Later, the telling shifts to mystery, when Rick chooses his final action but keeps it a secret from everyone, including the audience. More recently, in The Sympathizer, a first-person novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen, an espionage chief holds a double agent captive and forces him to write out his life story and, above all, tell the truth. The prose we read is that confession. Suspense hangs on the major dramatic question, will the spy tell the truth or lie? And will his choice save him or kill him? As the narrator's confession weaves back and forth over three decades, mysteries surrounding hidden assassination plots entice the reader, while at the same time, dramatic irony haunts every page. We realize that even though the protagonist faced death, he must have survived, or we wouldn't be reading his book. The Power of First Impressions. Let's end this chapter with a look at beginnings. While creating starting points, images that establish locations, chapters that open novels, actions that trigger scenes, be alert to the power of first impressions. When the reader audience encounters something new, his thoughts rush ahead, driven by curiosity, anticipating the worst or best or both, wondering where this new thing will lead. This is particularly true the moment a character enters the telling, and absolutely true when it's your protagonist. Resist the urge to plant your protagonist on page one. Instead, intrigue the reader or audience by withholding the protagonist until the most effective scene, and then give him an entrance. In the opening scenes of Casablanca, characters raise questions about the protagonist, finding him charismatic, yet aloof, renowned, yet mysterious. When the camera finally settles on Rick Blaine, he's dressed in a white tuxedo, playing chess against himself. After all those setups, the audience naturally wonders, who is this guy? No matter where you bring in your major characters, frame them with an entrance that introduces them with impact. In David Lean's Lawrence of Arabia, Sharif Ali first appears as a distant speck on the horizon, then rides slowly toward us, growing larger and larger against a blazing desert sky. In Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night, Mary Tyrone wanders into her living room, mumbling in a morphine haze. In Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, a man sits in a basement lit by 100 blazingly bright bare bulbs hung from the ceiling. He calmly tells the reader that he's stealing electricity from the city. In Season 1, Episode 1 of Phoebe Waller-Bridge's Killing Eve, a sweet-faced child sits in an ice cream parlor eating a sundae. From across the room, Villanelle smiles at her, and the kid gleams back. Then, as Villanelle heads for the door, she smacks the girl's ice cream into her startled face. In William Golding's Darkness Visible, the Luftwaffe pulverizes World War II London. Then, out of the raging, bomb-blasted inferno, a child emerges, naked, horribly burnt, and disfigured. In the Jerry Herman, Jerome Lawrence, Robert E. Lee musical MAME, MAME blows a bugle atop a curving staircase, then slides down the banister. Ideally, the entrance of a complex character intrigues us about his future and invites insight into his core self.